Christopher Brooks is a professor of anthropology in the School of World Studies at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond. As a nationally recognized biographer, his works include the best-selling I Never Walked Alone, the autobiography of an American singer, published in 2003, Follow Your Heart, Moving with the Giants of Jazz, Swing, and Rhythm and Blues, published in 2008, and the recently completed Dangerous Intimacy, 10 African-American Men with HIV, which is scheduled for release next month. His numerous publications focusing on the African continental and diasporan experience have appeared in such journals as American Anthropologist, the International Review of African-American Art, the Literary Griot, Black Sacred Music, the International Journal of Black Oral and Literary Studies, African-American Review, and the Encyclopedia of African-American Folklore, among others. He was an editor of the African-American Almanac, 10th edition, published in 2007, in which he wrote several major sections, including Africa and the African Diaspora. He has been a contributing writer to the African and African-American Religions and Religion and War volumes in the Religion and Society series, published by Routledge in 2001 and 2003, respectively. He has a chapter celebrating the centennial of W.E.B. Du Bois's landmark publication, The Souls of Black Folk, 100 years later, entitled The Souls of Black Folk, Can a Double Consciousness Be Heard? This is an examination of Du Bois's prophetic statement that the crucial issue of the 20th century would be the race issue. As a senior Fulbright researcher in 1999-2000, he examined women's rights organizations and their response to the HIV-AIDS pandemic in Zimbabwe and South Africa. He was also a senior research fellow at the Southern African Research Institute for Policy Studies in Harare. While there, he also lectured part-time at Arupe Jesuit College and the University of Zimbabwe. In July 2007, Dr. Brooks was in Kenya to evaluate a Christian Children's Fund program which delivers services to HIV/AIDS and other vulnerable orphans. A long-term volunteer at Deep Meadow Correctional Facility in Powhatan, Virginia, Dr. Brooks assists the inmates with literary and writing issues, I should say literacy and writing issues, and lectures to them on anthropological topics. He's currently writing a book on the tenor Roland Hayes, tentatively entitled Roland Hayes, Afro-America's Tenor. Please welcome Christopher Brooks.
Thank you, Dennis. Good afternoon. This is my first ARS conference, and I have to say I'm very impressed with some of the very slick PowerPoints that I've seen. And I didn't prepare one, so after that last session, I said, well, I better come around here real quick and introduce myself to John Bierman and see if we could find some appropriate images of Roland Hayes. So I did that so you'd have at least something to look at the screen. So here we are. Once called the Black Caruso, he was hailed as one of the greatest concert performers of the 20th century. During his 60-year career, the gifted American singer packed concert halls all over Europe, in South America, and throughout the United States. At the height of his popularity, he was one of the few artists, along with Fritz Kreisler, Ignaz Paderewski, Tito Skipa, John McCormick, Nellie Melba, Fedor Shalyapin, and Pablo Casals, who could sell out famous venues like New York's Town Hall and Carnegie Hall, Washington's Constitution Hall, Boston's Symphony Hall, Queens Hall, Covent Garden, and Wigmore Hall in London, and the Hollywood Bowl, among other major auditoriums throughout this country in Europe. He was the first African-American musician to perform with a major orchestra in the country in 1923, which led to him singing with many great conductors of the world, including Eugene Ormandy, Leopold Stokowski, Otto Klemperer, Bruno Walter, Pierre Monteau, Sergei Koussevitzky, Sir Henry Wood, Willem Mengelberg, and Gabriel Pernier. Following the tradition of other celebrated musicians, he sang for crown heads of Europe, prime ministers, presidents, and other heads of states. However, Roland Hayes is a name not well known today. I happened to give a lecture a few years ago and asked the audience if there was anyone who was familiar with that name, and only one person raised their hand. In part, I want to explore this phenomena and what role Hayes's recordings may or may not have played, and why we don't know that name as well as we should. In the early part of the 20th century, Roland Hayes was drawn to the power of the recorded voice. As a young man living in Chattanooga, he was taken by his voice teacher, Arthur Calhoun, to the residence of the newspaper editor, Colonel William Stone. After singing for the Stone family, the host asked the young tenor if he had heard any of the great singers of the day. Of course, he hadn't. William Stone then played recordings of Enrico Caruso, Nellie Melba, Emma Ames, Marcella Sembrick on his gramophone machine. Hayes recalled being reborn after that listening experience. Elsewhere, he referred to that evening at the Stones as a blind person being given sight. Yet elsewhere, he described it as one of the three epiphanies that he experienced during his formative years. It was, however, the voice of Enrico Caruso that would have the most profound impact on Roland that evening, and one which would linger the longest. As a result of it, he set a new goal, that of being a great concert artist in the tradition of Enrico Caruso himself. Years after achieving the celebrity which he had been given, sight, as you, if you want to put it that way, that fateful evening at the Stones, Roland Hayes sought to purchase the very Victor talking machine on which he had first heard those voices that had so inspired him. He wanted to have it as memorabilia for from his formative years. Although William Stone, the original owner of the machine, had passed by the 1930s, Roland Hayes communicated with his sister, Mrs. Ethel Carter, who agreed to give the machine to Hayes gratis. In late 1911, as a student in Boston, Roland Hayes recorded for the first time. The Edison Records recording of the Fisk Jubilee Quartet featured John W. Work leading the group and singing first tenor. Roland sang second tenor, but in this excerpt that we'll hear from that session, singing the solo in My Soul as a Witness, he's singing the solo in that, and I've been able to identify him singing solo on at least one other excerpt from that track. Okay, that first one. While Roland Hayes was in the building phase of his career in Boston during this period, he eventually entered the recording studio as a soloist in November 1917, and at the same time made history by being the first African-American concert musician to commercially record. The following week, Roland Hayes took the bold step of renting Boston Symphony Hall for a solo recital and scored a major success. Not willing to rest on his laurels, within days of his Grand Symphony Hall success, he traveled back to New York and entered the Columbia Graphophone Company recording studio to make more personal recordings. Hayes had earlier inquired about this process, but the Columbia label at that time, and most of this information comes, thankfully, from the groundbreaking work of Tim Brooks, who I'll comment on a little later. But the recording that he made in 1917, he realized that he needed assistance in helping to promote it, to support him in what would turn out to be a historic undertaking. He engaged the Boston-based African-American entrepreneur George W. Broom, who had considerable business and social contacts, to assist him with this promotion. With his most recent accompanist, Lawrence Brown, at the keyboard, Roland recorded Burley's arrangement of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Choral arrangements of that work had been available for some time, but Roland's was the first to be recorded by a solo artist. The recording was subsequently made available for purchase in Boston at 130 Boylston Street at the A.J. Piano Store, which was George Broom's address, and it also became Roland Hayes' official business address. And on the letterhead, there was Roland W. Hayes Phonograph Records, and it listed Roland W. Hayes as the sole owner, and to the right of that, George W. Broom, sales manager, etc. On May 4th of the following year, Roland was back in New York, this time for a more ambitious recording. He preserved on disc the challenging but celebrated tenor aria, Festi la Giuba, from Leon Camballo's I Pagliacci, made famous by Enrico Caruso. In addition to being more vocally challenging, Roland's recording of the I Pagliacci aria was also more expensive. According to Columbia's personal recording pricing schedule, a full orchestra which accompanied Hayes for this session fell into the $300 range. In a clear response to the lack of recordings of African-American concert musicians being available on disc, Roland advertised in the May 1918 issue of Crisis magazine, the very month he was back in New York making more recordings. In the advertisement, he marketed his records and made a not-so-subtle appeal to race pride in the process. Roland W. Hayes, the acknowledged leading singer of the Negro race, has brought out his first record, and he plans many more and many others in the very near future. Nothing else could so well introduce the series as the favorite and plaintive Negro melody, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. The record sells for $1.50 and can be used on any machine using disc records. The desired response was rather quickly achieved. After this successful session, whether it was through the actions of Roland Hayes or George Broom, the effort to get these recordings out to African Americans increased. Roland Hayes received several letters from individuals seeking to become agents for the sale and distribution of his records. The inquiries were directed to him or to Broome. The relationship between George Broome and Roland Hayes did not last. Letters from around late September 1918 sent out to prospective agents seeking to distribute his records or those requesting his services simply said, "For business reasons, Mr. Broome is no longer in my employ." And this would be one of several relationships that Roland Hayes would bring to a sudden end without much of an explanation. In 1920, he embarked for Europe, which was at the time necessary for a necessary step, I should say, for validating American artists in general. By the end of that year, Roland had won favor with the audiences throughout the British Isles. His management had arranged a test recording for him at the labels His Master's Voice, and that he eventually ended up destroying those masters because he and the label couldn't come to an agreement on how much of a budget would be devoted to this. He went back again in 1923, this is in Europe, and recorded several spirituals for the Aeolian or Vocalion label there in London. And his version of Swing Low Sweet Chariot, the Harry Burley version of Swing Low Sweet Chariot, you'll hear a clear difference in the version that he did in 1917, where his voice is a little darker and he makes the endings, for example, "coming for to carry me home" is a little bit more "coming for to carry me home." Not as, maybe not as pronounced as that, but it's not as distinct and concise as one would hear in that earlier recording. One work that had particular interest in that recording session was his own arrangement of "Sit Down, Child," which is very much like the work "You're Tired," or "Sit Down and You're Tired, Child," because the two works are synonymous. And because that spiritual has a very dramatic high B-flat, a climactic high B-flat, he was often invited to do it. Regarding that work, shortly after completing the session, Roland had his British management to contact Aeolian Hall about re-recording that very work, because after he heard it, he was unsatisfied with the performance and insisted that it be redone. Although the label managers or the A&R people said no, it was fine, he put his foot down and insisted. Part of this perhaps had to do with his personal circumstances. This was a spiritual that had been taught to him by his mother. It happened. Roland Hayes was very private about his life off of the stage, and as you'll see in this book, should you read it when it comes out, extremely private about it. Things that, and one was that his younger brother, Jesse, had died just earlier that year and died tragically, and he was out of the country. And shortly thereafter, within months, his mother, who he was extremely devoted to, died. So it was that 1923 recording of "Sit Down, Child," dedicated to his mother, Fanny Hayes, that he had performed at her funeral, although he was unable to be there. The version that we'll hear is from a later session from 1941, but I would like you to hear it nonetheless. Okay.
Oh, sit down, sister, I know you're tired. Sit down, cause you come a long way. Sit down, child, sit down the rest of the while. Oh, sit down, sister, I know you're tired. Sit down, cause you come a long way. Sit down, child, sit down the rest of the while. Oh, you come a long way. You had hard trials, I know you're down the rest of while. Oh, you come a long way, and the road was dark, and your load was heavy. Sit down, child, sit down the rest a little while. Tell me what you're waiting for. I'm waiting for my mother, 'cause I want to tell her howdy. Sit down the rest a little while. Tell me what you're waiting for. I'm waiting for my neighbor, I want to tell them howdy. Sit down the rest a little while. Oh, you come a long way, you had a big load, I know you're tired. Sit down a while, you come a long way, you had a big load, I know you're tired. Sit down a while. Oh, sit down, sister, oh, I know you're tired. Sit down, 'cause you come a long way. Sit down, child, sit down the rest of the while. Oh, you come a long way, and you had a child, I know you're tired.
Roland Hayes's most fertile period as a recording artist was at the end of the 1930s, but by then he was already into his 50s. He recorded close to 40 vocal works between 1939 and 1942, but that was not even a fraction of his enormous repertoire. For reasons that are still not clear, Roland Hayes came to dislike the recording medium. Somehow he came to feel that the recordings for the masses cheapened his art, and I was talking to Dennis a little earlier, and he said that that was a position that was taken by a number of the great European artists at the turn of that century, and I was unaware of that. But anyway, that turned out to be a tactical error for Roland Hayes. Particularly vis-a-vis his contemporaries, Marian Anderson and Paul Robeson. Marian Anderson had a significant recorded legacy, not to mention her celebrated 1939 Constitution Hall incident, that racial incident, which was inspired by Roland Hayes, by the way, a few years earlier. Paul Robeson had his Hollywood movies, as well as his politics, which drew international recognition and considerable condemnation in this country. There was an irony with Paul Robeson. Hayes did not see the 6-foot-plus Phi Beta Kappa scholar, athlete, actor, and singer as his artistic equal. Yet, Robeson was successful in the very medium that Roland Hayes deeply coveted, the big screen. In the late 1940s, Roland Hayes established his own label, Angel Mo Records, and this was the name he had given to his mother, which was a contraction of Angel Mother. But it wasn't especially successful. Let me skip on a little in the interest of time, though. He met a record collector, Arthur E. Knight, and it was Knight who would become involved in helping him to preserve his legacy, because Knight would introduce him to the recordist and audio engineer, Stephen Fassett. And Roland Hayes in the mid-1950s would record for the Vanguard label a two-album set called Six Centuries of Song, and it would be moderately successful, but by the mid-1950s, he was nearing 70 years old. And although he maintained that he was still singing well, you will hear a clear difference in his sound from those very early recordings, but I felt in the interest of time he wouldn't be able to do that. Stephen Fassett would record several live performances of Roland Hayes in the 1960s, including his Carnegie Hall, a concert in 1962 when the tenor was 75 years old, and in the mid-1960s, he sang duet concerts with his daughter, Afrika, who was still living in the Boston suburb, Newton, Massachusetts. It was after the death of Facet that his widow decided to put forward the money to produce a compilation of Roland Hayes' works, and that is the work that came out under the Smithsonian collection in 1990. This has been an incredible experience for me. I had for the first time in my career, of having a leave of absence this spring of 2009 to finish this work, which I've finished the first draft of it, and well, in the publishing business, as some of you know, it will go through another two or three or so before you see it, but hopefully that'll be accomplished in short time. But the personality in many ways could be challenging, and I think that perhaps played a role in our not knowing Roland Hayes as well. And although in the Black Heritage series, the stamp collection, you have a Paul Robeson, you have a Marian Anderson, there are at least two biographies of Paul Robeson. There may be a third one, at least two on Marian Anderson, one of which has just come out, but not a scholarly biography on Roland Hayes. And he certainly had as full, if not fuller, a life and as colorful a life and career. But this is an omission that should be corrected very soon. Thank you very much. And just before I sit down, I would like to acknowledge the friendship and technical assistance of Tim Brooks, who provided me with these recordings, and one person posthumously, the late Patricia Turner. Patricia Turner inspired me to write this book on Roland Hayes years before I realized that I was supposed to do it. And she gave me a copy of Angel Mower, and a copy from 1942, one of the first editions, and she gave it to me years before I had embarked on this project. So I would like to acknowledge that that influence. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christopher. There is time for a couple of questions, if there are any.
Oh,
we have one over here.
Okay, sure. Yes, sir. Roland Hayes had, let's say, high standards. He had a very exacting personality, but at the same time, he avoided controversies like Jim Crow kinds of events. There were several occasions when I said that the 1939 incident with Marian Anderson was inspired by Roland Hayes. A few years before, he had performed at Constitution Hall, but when he walked out on stage and saw that the audience was segregated, he walked back backstage and insisted that the audience should be integrated. Well, of course, the people were sitting in their chairs and, you know, saying, well, you know, what are we going to do, stand up, or the black people go and sit by a white person or what have you, so they didn't move. So he came back out on stage and did the concert. Now, the manager of Constitution Hall at the time, a man by the name of Fred Hall, I'll just say that may be the wrong name, insisted that he would be the last African-American to do a concert in that. And so Constitution Hall put in a white artists only policy in the hall, and it is that which led to it being challenged by Marian Anderson in 1939. Mm-hmm. And there was one other Jim Crow incident in Baltimore at the Lyric Theater. And I'm from Baltimore, so I knew the Lyric Theater growing up. And it was in 1926 where, once again, he had insisted that he would not sing in front. He had sung in Washington 2 days before, and the audience was integrated. When he went to Baltimore, the audience was segregated. And so there were African-American influential ministers and several. They attacked him, Roland Hayes for participating in this. So it was really played out many times, stories and what have you, in the Afro, and there were pro-Roland Hayes, and they had placards that said Jim Crow Roland and a number of other things and what have you. So he didn't take a stand on, or was perceived not to have taken a stand on some of those important racial issues of the day. So I think that that played a role as well. Okay, yes, sir. That's right.
I know that he was at a very advanced age making those recordings, and that is some of the most moving singing I have ever heard by anyone at any age.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting that you raised that, because that came out in the late 1940s, around 1948 when he made those recordings, and it's around that time that he coined the term Afro-American. And so I felt obliged, since he seems to have been the person to coin that term, Afro-American, to use it in its title. So the book is tentatively called Roland Hayes, Afro-America's Tenor. So just a piece of information surrounding that, but that was the time. He felt that the term Negro was not appropriate to reference the African-American experience, or misnomer and what have you. So in that regard, he was really ahead of the curve in many ways, but he certainly wasn't perceived that way.
That's all we have time for.
Okay. Thank you.
Once again.
Thank you.